I would like to call the work session, the Metro Council meeting of April 23rd, 2019, to order. Councilor Stacey, will you do the briefing?
Thank you, President Peterson. Please note that we were on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire, you're chuckling, this is a serious announcement, or fire alarm, please exit through the door on the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance into the plaza where we will gather. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk on the second floor. Is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue, and a fire extinguisher is located as you leave the room. Not sure that last phrase clarifies anything, so I'm going to suggest removing it. A fire extinguisher is located in the corner to the right of the dais on the wall.
Oh, there it is.
To the west, on the west side of the dais.
Oh, that just confuses me. Oh. It's over here. Yeah.
East-west works for some people, right, left, as you face the dais. Yeah. Thank you for that opportunity.
Stage left.
Thank you.
Dais stage left.
Feel so safe. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Much appreciated. We are going to get, hopefully, Randy on the phone. Is he on the phone? Okay. For a legislative update. Awesome.
Hi, Randy.
Hi, this is Randy.
Hey! Randy!
Wow. I should do this more often.
You're up in the sky, Randy.
God, is that you?
I am in the balcony of the Senate chamber. Huh? As I was just saying to Kate, there isn't really a good place in the Capitol to have a nice, quiet, private spot where you can have a conversation like this, so hopefully this will work. Yep. Can you all hear me?
Yep, and the floor is yours, so take it away.
Loud and clear.
Okay, great. Well, I just want to summarize where we are in a number of bills, and I think I have just one or two questions for you today. So let me just start kind of checking off some things, okay? Just giving you status reports on a number of things. I'll start with the various solid waste and product stewardship bills. Our household hazardous waste bill has gone to Ways and Means, as you know. Apologies in advance if I cough. I've got this asthma issue that I'm dealing with. Jack Dempsey and I have begun the process of trying to figure out the politics of moving the bill out of Ways and Means, and we've met with the two co-chairs of the subcommittee that's likely to receive it and are working on that. So that's likely to be pretty quiet for the next month because Ways and Means won't really begin hearing policy bills for a little while. They're still working through agency budgets and hearings and things like that. So just FYI there. Two other product stewardship bills that have gone down to Ways and Means already, in which we are involved but much less at a much lower level. The mattress stewardship bill, which Scott Clagg has been working with the advocates to get that written right, and the pharmaceutical stewardship bill, on which we are less involved directly. And both of those have already passed out of their policy committee and gone down to Ways and Means. The other two solid waste-related bills that I'll mention, plastic bags, House Bill 2509, that bill came out of committee, went to the floor, had to go back to committee for a technical fix, and is coming back to the floor now in the House. And it's a House bill still in the House, but it seems to be in pretty good shape. There was an addition of language around garment bags. There was an addition of the clarification of that the fee for a paper bag is going to be 5 cents, but that you can go higher. And those are the tweaks that are being made to clean that bill up and get it back to the floor. So all of those things are moving, and let's see, was there another one? Oh, straws. I'm paying much less attention to the plastic withdraws bill. I understand there are some technical problems with it. It came over from the Senate and is going to be heard in the House, and I suspect there'll be some changes, but that's been a lower priority for us. So that's the solid waste category for now. And by the way, one last thing. The bill that caused the little controversy around alternative daily cover that, you know, you received some communication about, as I have previously reported, I believe it went from the House Natural Resources Committee to the House Revenue Committee, where it's currently sitting, and I have a meeting scheduled with the chair of the Revenue Committee to, among other things, weigh in on that. So that's it on solid waste. Let me talk to you about the Commission for the Blind legislation. Let me take a two-second breath in case anybody has a question about anything I just said.
Questions?
I would like to ask a question. Go ahead, Rob.
The alternative day recovery issue, that's not something I'm aware of.
We'll brief you later.
Huh?
It's a bill that would prohibit taxing alternative daily cover, and the controversy around that is less around the bill than around some of the theatrics that went around the bill, where it's apparently intended to affect Metro. It doesn't mention Metro, but a gentleman that spends a lot of time at Metro came in and testified about Metro threatening to tax alternative daily cover, which is not true, and so I then weighed in with a memo to the committee saying that you heard some testimony that was misleading, and there was a little bit of tit-for-tat around that. The committee did move the bill out with a couple of no votes, and there's a lot of questions about what it actually would do and its effect on Metro or not. So I'm happy to... there's some email traffic in your boxes about this.
Thank you.
So is that good?
Super.
Randy, I have a question as well. You might have covered it when you were listing it, but the styrofoam bill today that passed the House.
I didn't cover it. Yeah, it failed yesterday, and it came back on reconsideration today and passed. I haven't been playing on that bill, but it did end up passing today with 32 votes, I think. Okay. And I guess the heartburn that people were having was around Agilex, but I'm literally not on paying any attention to that bill. So maybe I should be, but I haven't been.
Yes.
So, but I did hear today in my lobby group meeting that it passed today. So, narrowly. Anyway, let's go to the Commission for the Blind. So there was a mechanical snafu that occurred here. The bill was introduced and it got inadvertently sent to a committee that couldn't hear it because of, you know, technical legislative rules. And so a new bill had to be introduced. It came and it showed up yesterday it was introduced by the House Rules Committee, supposed to be referred to the House Rules Committee, which hasn't happened yet. And I've been working with our team to modify the language somewhat in ways that take care of some other players out there in the world, City of Portland, Port of Portland, some other communities that care. I'll be sharing that language with the blind vendors and the Commission for the Blind probably in either today or tomorrow. And we understand that the committee would like to move quickly on the bill. We're meeting with all the members and so far, you know, getting a good reception. Scott Cruikshank and I had a productive conversation last Friday morning, or whatever it was, Wednesday, I guess, last Wednesday, with the staff of the Commission for the Blind, as well as the head of the committee of the blind vendors. And so I think we'll have a productive way forward, I hope. And I hope when I share the language with them, they'll be okay with it. And we can go forward with something. The productive way forward involves us doing some things, you know, doing some sort of cooperative efforts with them that don't involve changing, you know, the requirements in statute. But we do need to get the statute fixed. And there are a lot of other entities around the state that are now paying attention to this that have either a convention. convention center or a performing arts center or, you know, some other, an airport, for instance, that is affected potentially by the overbroad language that was passed in 2017. So we're on track to get that cleaned up, and we'll see if we can do it without undue controversy. I'll stop. Questions about that? Okay. Moving forward, let's see. I will talk to you about briefly about the carbon bill. There's no new information. Is why it's going to be brief. But we do anticipate another amendment to come out possibly this week or early next week. I'm told by Jack that it will be the -84 amendment, which is more than there usually are amendments for any given bill. Many of those amendments that have been introduced, I think, have been sort of stalling tactics by opponents of the bill, trying to kind of suck up all the time of legislative counsel. But at any rate, there should be another omnibus amendment coming out fairly soon, you know, I've been in communication with the two chairs of the committee about some modest changes that we'd like to see, but they're moved in the right direction from the first version to the second version in terms of, funding for the Climate Smart strategy. Let's see, a couple of things that have come up that are cause for concern, that are not, you know, the kinds of things we come here to look to work on. One of them is a bill that I wasn't paying any attention to because it's relating to education funding. But it's the big education funding bill, which includes, I believe, a business gross receipts tax. And it includes a language explicitly preempting local governments from taxing business receipts. And so the concern that we have is, while we haven't proposed anything along those lines, it's another tool that would be taken off the table with respect to a potential transportation measure in 2020. And so it turns out that a lot of local governments have concerns about that. And the League of Cities, I think, is going to organize some sort of a letter saying, this is not okay, and even if you have to do this, there should be some exemptions for taxes that are passed by the voters or something like that. So we discussed it today with the lobbyists at noon, and I think in line with your principle about avoiding preemptions, I would feel comfortable adding our logo to some generic statement that we don't support preempting local government's taxing authority unless you told me not to do that.
Randy?
I'm seeing head nodding.
As Mary Carr would have said back in the day, kill it.
Yeah, easier said than done, but yeah. It's part of a big deal around education funding, and yet apparently it's not actually a deal. Like, you would think that in exchange for business support for the bill, they might include this preemption, but apparently business is not supporting the bill, and still they've got this preemption in there. So it's problematic. We're trying to figure out what the politics are. I only became aware of this, you know, a week ago, and many local governments are weighing in right now. And I'm among them. So anyway, another one that I've been assiduously avoiding, but I think can avoid no more, is a bill that would authorize the creation of children's districts, and it's been the focus or sort of priority for Senator Riley for several years, and people have been fighting this off for several years, and I've, you know, stayed out of it. The special districts have been fighting it off, and some of the local governments, and I was called today by one of our local government affairs colleagues saying, hey, this could really mess up your parks levy and any kind of permanent rate you have through compression. And all the bill does is it authorizes the creation of a local children's levy, but, you know, chances are that if a children's district were put on the ballot, you know, it's the kind of thing that would likely pass. And depending on its size and depending on the economic conditions at the time, could really affect the, our specifically our parks levy. So it's probably, you know, actually happening is a few years into the future because of all the process that would have to happen, and I'm not sure what the plans are for the parks levy. So we're navigating that one. I just want to, I'm giving you a heads up about it. I don't necessarily, I don't know exactly how I'm going to play it, but I'm working with other colleagues to try to figure out the best way to ensure that we are held harmless. So it's complicated. Some of the proposals that have come forward from other jurisdictions about how to protect themselves could have negative unintended consequences down the road. Should we, for instance, decide, like we considered a few years ago, to go out for a natural areas district or a trails district or anything like that. So, you know, obviously these are all hypotheticals right now. But I want to flag this bill for you. And I'll stop and see if you have any questions about that that I might be able to go track down answers for later. Okay. We're good?
No, I have one question.
Okay.
I guess I just have a comment, which is, I would evoke the argument that we made when we were passing our levy that we need to, and we had a lot of response from jurisdictions saying, oh, compression, we can't do this levy on a regional basis. And so, you know, I'd be cautious jumping into a strategy that kind of opposes without really knowing what those options are. You know, I don't want to pit us against children here. And so I don't know what those options are around children's districts. I will say this, that maybe there's an opportunity to get park districts in the mix and maybe address some of our longstanding interest in having an ongoing district for our parks and open spaces.
Well, that's what we've, yes, just quick response. I hear you on the not wanting to take a position that is inconsistent with positions we've taken in the past. The distinction, though, is that our levy is a levy, and this would be a district, and so levies get compressed first. That's just a technical answer, not a policy answer, really. So this is like the equivalent of a library district or something like that. But I believe the relating clause doesn't allow us into this bill. I think it's relating to children's districts or something. You know, so we couldn't actually jump on board. And I think we'd want to have a longer conversation about it. But, yeah, I hear you about the caution about getting involved. And I haven't actually done anything on this yet. I just started getting roped into it today and pinging staff, colleagues. Brian Kennedy gave me a very thoughtful response to my questions, and I'm still kind of working through that. But I just wanted to highlight for you the fact that this is out there and it's raising this concern. But I haven't actually made any kind of taking any action on it.
Randy?
Yeah.
But we would want to, we're not the only ones out there other cities pointed out this issue to us, right?
Yeah, this was flagged for me by Gresham, who, their concern is that a lot of their core services are property tax based, and I think maybe even levy based, and would get compressed like police and fire, you know. They're very concerned about it for that reason. I haven't really run all the trap lines to see who else is concerned. I know that there's been a lot of grumbling about this proposal for a long time. It has more traction this year. It's already passed the Senate. I think let me do some more, figuring out of any kind of recommendation with staff and give you some more complete and thoughtful information. I'm just flagging it today.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, Randy, so if what I understand about compression is that it's most impactful during a recession. But I think right now there's nobody in compression, no jurisdiction in compression at this moment, if I
compression in Portland.
In Portland, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's true that nobody's in compression, but it is true what you said about it. Yeah, when the economy goes bad, compression gets worse.
Okay.
That's my understanding. Is that Martha that chimed in? Martha can run rings around me on this issue.
Portland homeowner.
she's just smarter than I am.
Thank you, Randy.
Yes.
See you later.
Okay. Especially on property taxes as a city manager. Okay, so a couple other things to mention. I just want to, this is just a information that the bill that is attempting to advance some funding for I-205 has a hearing coming up on May 1st, and we earlier signed on to a letter of support for, a solution to the I-205 funding problem, the, you know, Abernathy Bridge and the Stafford area. And then the gun bill, Senate Bill 978, which came out of the Judiciary Committee. We thought it was going to go to the floor for a vote. In fact, it went back to the Rules Committee for some further amendments. So, still alive. Not sure exactly what amendments. I don't think it has to do with the provisions that we care about having to do with our ability to control guns on our properties. And the one, I think, policy call I have for you is an issue I have not yet discussed with you, but that you have discussed, at least the last council did, and it is legislation having to do with missing and murdered Indigenous women. So the council passed a proclamation last year on this topic, and there's legislation here this year, House Bill 2625, that calls for a study related to how law enforcement and other resources can best be deployed to address the problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And I understand you have a resolution or a proclamation that is sort of in process to come to you very shortly. And this bill, coincidentally, which calls for this study, is up, I believe, next week for a hearing. It's not actually posted, but that's my understanding. And so my question for you is whether it's okay to support this legislation by just noting the resolution that you previously passed, unless you pass a new one between now and then. I believe Roger, who has been working on this, is Roger Gonzalez, is in the room there and can elaborate if I've botched the explanation at all.
Roger's handed it all out. I can take a stab.
Okay.
I think it's good that we've already passed a resolution from the last council on this exact subject. What we were doing in the midst of, while this bill came forward from the legislature, is getting ready for another resolution continuing to support and also do it in tandem with the city of Portland as they prepare their resolution. So what you have before you is one that is proposed to basically reiterate our position, but in the middle of that is this ballot language to actually to fund the study. So if it's okay with everybody here, we would ask Randy to help move that bill along.
The funding
bill language, just to clarify, President Peterson, bill language, not ballot language. It's just a bill in the legislature.
I don't think I said ballot, but okay. Maybe I did.
That's what I thought I heard. Yeah, okay.
Did you talk about funding? So the state would fund this. Is this something that Metro's going to be asked to fund?
No.
No. This is just a state, it would be a state-financed study, and all we'd be doing is saying, yes, go forth and do it. We support that.
Do I hear head nods?
Yes.
Nodding. All right, we're all nodding. Good to go. Thank you.
Okay. I don't have anything else. I don't think that I need to mention right now. There's a couple other things going on, that I've either mentioned in the past and nothing's changed, or that I don't need any kind of policy input on. So,
okay.
And the big ones I think I covered.
All right. Well, thank you. Any questions? Final questions for Randy before he goes? Fight's
Thanks
a good
Randy.
Fight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good afternoon.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Tyler, don't sit down. next up is the Regional Investment Strategy Update with Tyler and Craig. They're going to give us a quick overview. Thank you both for being here. Did you color coordinate today?
We try to match and
yeah,
empty at all times.
Since I didn't
need so gray.
I think we know it was this on.
Yep.
Yes, okay. I think we know I was going to be doing this until this morning, so. But yeah, luckily we figured it all out. So thanks for having us. Craig Beebe for the record.
Heather Frisbee from GAPD.
I'm going to start us off with just a little update on recent engagement that's been going on for the regional investment strategy as a whole and also for the parks bond in particular, and also just give a quick preview of things that are happening for the housing bond, but they'll be here next week, so they'll be able to give you more detail next week. As you know, we try to come every 2 weeks to provide an update, a general kind of high-level update on everything that's going on for the investment strategy work. Usually that's Andy, but he's out today, so that's why we're here. So thanks for having us. And then Tyler's going to talk about transportation funding task force after me. So over that little thing. So up here behind you and on the photos are pictures of recent community forums that we've had that have actually, for the first time, been addressing all three of the regional investment strategy issues together. So, so it's been pretty great, as you all are aware and have no doubt heard from the community. Folks would like us to not come to them one at a time to talk about one issue and then another issue and another issue, and they've been telling us that for a while. And so working with community, we helped put together program, the agenda, and the questions for these forums. There's been two community forums that brought back people who participated in the Parks Bond's first round of engagement in the fall. So we kind of brought those cohorts back together to ask them about the Parks Bond, draft framework, which I'll get to in a second, as well as some questions to help inform affordable housing bond implementation and the transportation measures development. And then in addition to those two forums, one was in Clackamas County and one was in Cornelius Thursday and Saturday, respectively. We've also kind of prepared materials for community partners to do their own discussion groups that they want to lead, so, or that they want to have just with their members. So Apano, NEA have done those already, and Unite Oregon is scheduled to do one this week. So kind of using materials that we developed for these same questions so we get kind of common format of feedback. So very successful. I think between the two of them, there are we have around 50, 55 people who participated. I was at the Clackamas one. I was not at the Cornelius one. I believe Councilor Gonzalez was at the Cornelius one, if you had anything you want to add. But it was... They're, it might be really, really great. And I will note that, when we were planning them, we were saying, well, how do we do the transition from topic to topic? And, you know, it emerged that just happens naturally, right? This is, it's not, these aren't arbitrarily, jammed together topics, in people's lives. And so we're over that, but it was just nice to have that confirmed during the forums. So as I mentioned, a big part of that was Parks and Nature's getting feedback on the draft framework. So that was just one piece of everything that they were doing. They've been getting back together with a lot of key partners, conservation partners, trails partners. So the Trails Forum is this week, the Indigenous Community, MPAC, coming back with the draft framework and saying, hey, did we get your feedback right, and including these community members. And so far, they've been getting really good sort of feedback on the draft. I would say there are a lot of green dots at the forum that I went to in terms of, does this criteria match your community's interest on this program? So that was good. And I think there's also been some helpful refinements that will continue to help kind of piece together the what will be the getting towards a recommended framework for the Parks and Nature bond. This week, there's also more presentations to local governments. Happy Valley City Council last week. There's a Washington County City Managers meeting tomorrow. Really just kind of, again, we talked to a lot of these folks before, but really coming back after more council direction, after more staff analysis to say, hey, are we getting it right? And the Parks team is scheduled to return here for work session on May 7th, and we're going to provide an overview of that engagement, everything that we heard. And we've got a sort of a series of key policy questions that they want to go over with the council to help with the sort of final steps of putting together the recommended bond framework that Martha will bring on the 14th of May. So, and that's all building up towards a May 30th referral, as I think you're all aware. I'll stop there. Is anyone any questions on engagement before I move forward?
I don't have a question, but could you go through the types of high-level questions that you were asking them to get them engaged? I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, sure, yeah. At those forums, for Parks and Nature, I totally forgot to mention, we're doing Community Leaders Forum on Friday at the zoo, which is, again, that same format. For Parks and Nature, it was really focused on the program criteria and which of these reflect the draft program criteria. You kind of see the boards up there. Which of these reflect the needs of your community? There's green dot, somewhat reflects the needs of your community, yellow dot, isn't really a priority for your community. That's really actually how much of a priority. That was a blue dot. So a lot of green dots in that. So we did that first, kind of walk around. It was a nice way to get started. And then on housing, the questions were really geared around both informing our own site acquisition strategy and helping our local partners out with their implementation strategies. The questions were sort of imagine the ideal place for affordable housing in your community, sort of like, what's there? What makes it perfect or, good for affordable housing? So you hear things like transportation. You hear things like parks and nature. I think one thing that stood out was at the Clackamas one was somebody saying, folks with lower incomes who need affordable housing want all the same things that folks with higher incomes who can choose where they want to live want. It's not like, different worlds. And not rocket science, but it was, just very nice and blunt. A lot of those stories are very personal, of course. We asked what are you going to find information about affordable housing? So where are people in your community? If you need services, where do you go for those? So we can kind of figure out how to best to set up marketing and screening. What kinds of barriers do people face finding affordable housing and staying in affordable housing? And how, all of that's designed to inform the sort of wraparound implementation strategies, where the housing will be, the best places to build and create and protect affordable housing, and also how best to get the communities that we want to see advance racial equity through the creation of that housing, the screening and the marketing and the recruitment and all that. On transportation, we focused on the region-wide programs element of the measure, which we're not going to talk about very much today, but we kind of kept a very high level. We listed a few potential types of investments, safety, kind of smart technologies, sort of like traffic signals that work together to help buses go faster, cleaner buses, and off-street trails for commuting purposes. And sort of said which of these really stand out to you as being able to serve your community or bring benefit to your community. And then, of course, said what's missing, and people had a lot of interesting ideas. And so it was 3.5-hour-long forums, and then an amazing richness of information and feedback and input. And we're hoping to continue to, work with the groups, the community groups that helped us set these up, and maybe even bring back some of those same people again in the future to kind of continue that conversation, because there's certainly a lot of eagerness to engage. So,
thank you.
Yeah. And like I said, we'll continue that conversation Friday at the community Leaders Forum at the zoo, which you are all invited to attend. It's in the morning at the zoo. You can let me know if you have questions. And then there's a lunch and learn for the Parks and Nature Bond Thursday at noon. Again, everyone's welcome. It's designed for staff to kind of hear about what's in the draft framework and give feedback. And the other thing I forgot to mention in engagement is we've got 3 surveys. The Parks and Nature survey is open right now through next Monday. There's a housing survey that's being set up asking a lot of those same questions, and there's a transportation survey that's going to be focused on the corridors and the programs after the task force meets, and we'll get to corridors in a second. And I realize it's 3 separate surveys, which kind of, is the opposite of what I just said about trying to combine things. So it's overwhelming. We're doing our best, and we'll try to link them to each other at least so that people can give feedback on multiple things. So,
plus you have better results with 3 15-minute
exactly.
surveys than 1 hour long.
If you've had a good meal and you're kind of moving along together, you can get to multiple questions. But on a survey where someone might be taking on their phone or something like that, you want to kind of take smaller bites. So, okay. Just just really quick, housing bond, as I mentioned, they will be here, the team, I think Emily is in the room, will be here next work session, April 30th, they'll give an update on implementation strategies, as well as some of the engagement findings, what we heard, and they're also going to be seeking some council direction on certain policy issues related to the acquisition strategy, the metro acquisition strategy portion of the bond. Following that, those two items are the use of funds for gap finance and workforce and diversity in contracting. Those are a little preview there. I think you should have the worksheets in Granicus now, so if there's more information there, I'm sure. And then next Thursday, on the 2nd, they will be coming back to you to ask for your approval of the second phase one project for the bond. This will be in Clackamas County. And it's a site acquisition, and the federal approval is for about $2.6 million for a future housing program that will eventually house 45 people who've experienced chronic homelessness. So that's a little preview of that. Hopefully I didn't... $2.7 million. It's changed from my notes. So... Somebody rounded down. I don't know.
So just that while we've got this moment, there were several members of the Housing Task Force that talked to counselors about expectations on the equity side of the equation as well as the contracting. Dr. Stephen Holt was in here representing. I don't know how many of the counselors he talked to, but yeah.
Yeah. Christine and I met with him.
I haven't been approached yet.
Okay. Well, just so you know, there was some discussion at the last meeting. Look it over, Emily, who was there. I was not there. There was some concern about...
I was in a meeting with you.
Yeah. There was some concern about the... how does this all roll out? The engagement itself... there was concern about the contracting and the lack of specificity at this point in the process. And I think that there's just an inherent tension between getting a program up and going and having that kind of specificity. But I also worked with Jess to put some material together that we can now use to talk to folks about that just shows where everybody is on minority contracting and where they could go to, the barriers to getting there, and some of the policy implications. So we're just get the information down of the things that we're struggling through so that we can have a more robust conversation with them. I can't believe I just used that word. I never want to use that word, and I just used it. But I think it's important, right, to show that we are thinking and we are working on these things, but there are truly things that we are struggling through, get that into context. And so I know that Jess was working on, and probably Emily in the background, working on trying to give some context to the work that's already been going, the good work that's already been going on, but may not have been communicated right there in the work session with them. So I'm hoping that they feel more confident about the direction.
Now that it's all coming back to me, I recall how Stephen was moved and gratified by the piece that you imposed on Jess to develop. It was timely, and it had information that he wasn't aware that we were aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's critically important to show that we're concerned about the same things the communities of color are actively concerned about, and we're weighing those, even though we haven't produced a document that said that yet.
Yeah. Serena Cruz is also interested in the conversation.
I'm able to be at the meeting, but
I'll follow up with her.
Serena.
She was very evidently much more interested in the minority contracting portion of it, so I'll follow up with her. Okay. Next.
Okay. I'm going to pass it over to Tyler.
Transportation. So I just handed out, and I will leave additional copies. There's 20 copies here at the front for the public in attendance. You saw an earlier version of this memo on Friday. It is an analysis. We asked, As you recall, at the last task force meeting, we asked task force members to individually participate in an exercise asking them, if you were to put together a hypothetical transportation investment measure that invested in 15 corridors, what corridors would you include? And then asking them the same question for 5 corridors. And the purpose of this, we want to be really clear, was not a voting exercise, was not asking them to, get really attached to what they were putting forward, but we realized with 75 corridors and 34 task force members, we couldn't just sort of throw 75 corridors out on the table and say, start prioritizing. So we wanted to give them a place from which to start the conversation. So the early results of that survey exercise are what are captured in the memo. It has changed a little bit from what you saw on Friday. We had 3 late-breaking task force members, bless their heart, who completed it yesterday afternoon. So this captures...
Clock voting?
I honestly didn't look that closely. I don't think so.
I haven't assessed it that closely.
No, I haven't done that. But the reason, we just wanted you to see and understand how we're going to frame the conversation for them tomorrow. So we're going to remind them of the 75 corridors that they started from and the values that they have said are really important. And then say, when you look at these corridors, here's the potential impacts that investing in these corridors could have. And does this feel sufficient to you? Are there values that you have a task force have discussed that are really important to you that you think aren't fully addressed in this? Are there values that maybe you think you're addressing more than you need to? Is this fair? Is this an appropriate application around the region? Do we distribute equitably around the region? Equally around the region. Does this capture the needs for future growth? So we'll ask them to reflect on that in small groups and report back about what values they think this list does a good job of advancing and what values they would like to see the list advance more. And we'll use that to set up their next conversation on May 15th. So we're continuing with really helping remind them of the values that you as a council have prioritized and that they as a task force have prioritized and thinking about how do they use these corridors to express those values. Yes.
Could you just explain briefly the box at the end, not selected in 15?
Oh, yes. The box on the back of the page, not selected in 15, those were the corridors that when they did not show up at all when we asked people to identify what corridors they would put in a 15-corridor measure. So the most expansive measure of the options that we gave them, these were the corridors that received no votes.
So they were included in a list. How many entries were there in the list?
There were 75 corridors in the list, and there were 33 of the 35 task members filled out a survey. So
they had multiple opportunities to list these, and only these 8 or 9 didn't make anybody's list for anything.
Exactly. So we indicated that for the task force members because we hope that those are easy corridors to move to the third tier, which is still saying we know these corridors need investment, we know that they're important places in our region, we just don't think that they're quite ready for a measure in 2020. And, yeah?
Would you describe the two lists to me? I'm not sure if I follow. So I'm when you say 15 corridors, I would assume I would see 1 through 15 on here, but there's actually 1 through 22. And then on the 5, I would assume, I'd see 1 through 5. So tell me how you read that.
Yeah, sorry. So the matrix in the left-hand column that's labeled 15 corridor selection, when we asked task force members to identify the 15 corridors that they would include in a hypothetical investment measure, these are corridors where more than 20% or more of task force members included these corridors on their list. Similarly, for the 5 corridor selection, when we asked task force members to indicate what corridors they would include in a 5 corridor measure, 10% or more of task force members indicated that the corridors in the middle column, those were ones that they would include.
So 10% of 33 is 4 people.
Right? It's a small number.
At least 4 people.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's more of a the more interesting information is what's eliminated, and that was sort of more the result of the process.
Yep. And then the I think that's valuable. But I think what the matrix at the top shows you is where there was sort of consistent interest in a corridor, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so there was a lot of interest in 82nd Avenue.
So is that in descending order, Tyler? So like at least 10 people put 82nd Avenue.
Something
like that.
For 82nd, I think it was 23. And then it was a smaller number for Sandy Boulevard.
It's interesting then how it came out pretty good.
Yeah, it's a very interesting list. So we just wanted you to have this. It's posted on the website for the public to review as well. And the task force will have the conversation tomorrow. They'll also meet on the May 15th to continue the conversation, and on May 29th will be their last meeting to discuss their corridor recommended tiering. And hopefully at the end of that meeting, they are advancing a proposal to you to consider as a council with three potential tiers of corridors. In advance of their meetings on the 15th and the 29th, as Craig indicated, we are putting out a survey that we will send to all of you and encourage you to distribute to your networks, where we'll provide the public an opportunity to comment about their experience on some of these corridors that are rising to the top. We had originally hoped to give out the same survey to the public that we gave to the task force members, and the feedback we got was that is really complicated and really annoying. And so we wanted something that captured people's individual lived experiences a bit more and that would be usable both for this corridor prioritization process and for eventual project selection process. So we'll be sending that survey out to you when it's ready for the public and encouraging you to share it. That does lead us, so with the task force recommendation in May, I think we're scheduled to come back to you June 3rd for your feedback and thoughts on the task force recommendation. And after that, we will move towards supporting the local investment teams, which will be thinking about what projects they would propose on those individual corridors. Those will be made up of community members and supported by local jurisdiction staff. And the task force will start to think a little bit more about what are those regional programs that the council has indicated interest in, and will be bringing the results of the community engagement work that Craig discussed earlier to the task force to inform that conversation. Any questions?
It's a little bit in the weeds now that I'm thinking about the kind of survey, but there were 75 corridors. And so even if I take all the ones listed on here, it doesn't total 75. Are there some that just didn't make this? How did ones that aren't on this list get, where are those?
So for the left, so it means that fewer than 20%, between 0 and 20% of task force members voted for them. So they're there, and they're certainly still, we'll give them to the task force to continually consider and think about how they want to tier them. But we're trying to narrow this down for them, give them some place to start from.
And so it's about 1 to 6 people that didn't vote for it.
Yes.
Because zero means that they're in the list below.
Yes.
Sam, I think your question is, there should be a total of 75 corridors on here.
We're not selecting the 15. I think it would be here.
There's a gap.
There's a gap. For the left-hand column here, in order to have made this list, they needed to receive about 6 votes in the corridor selection process.
Yeah, so it's 6 between 20%.
So if they received 6 votes or more, they're on this list. If they received 0 votes, they're on this small box.
1 through 5.
And if they received 1 to 5 votes, they are not on this list. They will be considered and continue to be part of the process, but in this condensed analysis, we didn't list them all.
You just didn't want to shame these by saying you got 0 votes. That's a way of presenting it.
Do you think there was some lobbying going on amongst each other or from the outside?
I would say we actually had some, that I know of, we had some great organization by task force members thinking about, particularly some folks who were thinking about climate and some folks who are thinking about equity and transit options, did a lot of work looking at the analysis, doing some conversation amongst themselves, thinking about what was really important to them. TriMet gave out some interesting information indicating what corridors that were being considered they thought were really ripe for transit investment. So, yeah, there were some great conversations both at the task force table and externally.
Mm-hmm. Those of us who rely on the 75 and now have to walk half a mile rather than a quarter mile to a bus stop because we can't dare cross Chavez on foot, it's regrettable.
There are a lot. I think the thing to remember about this is it shows how significant the needs are across the region,
yeah.
Right? And even things that weren't a top priority, people weren't saying they don't have needs. They were saying we have something that's way more urgent.
Mm-hmm. So, in spirit of Councillor Lewis not being here, I tried to tally the corridors that I could identify just readily off the top of my mind that are in Washington County.
Yeah.
But as for projects identified for Clackamas County, I see maybe two or three that are directly in Clackamas County. I could be miscounting because I don't know if a corridor extends deeply into an interest area. How is that geographical representation? It seems super Portland-centric to me.
I would say... And this is going to be one of the questions that the task force will discuss amongst themselves. There, you know, any time that you are just looking at data, the Portland and Multnomah County region show up in a more assertive way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some fairly significant, so in terms of Clackamas County interest, yeah, Highway 212 is a key priority for them. 122nd actually heads into Clackamas County. McLaughlin is a key priority for Clackamas County. Foster heads down into Clackamas County. Yep, 82nd actually continues down through Clackamas County. We've made a big point of that's not just a Multnomah County corridor. And then Highway 43 in McAdam. So there's a fair amount of, there's fairly good representation from around the region.
My knowledge of that side of the region, not what it should be.
Someone need to take you on a tour.
Yeah, I've been on several tours. I just...
Well, Paul Sobs will take you on a tour.
Okay, cool.
There's always learning opportunities for all of us.
It doesn't help when you actually did travel forecasting here, you know, every single darn road in the entire region. And the bus lines. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
It's
a really amazing job, actually, to get to this point, so thank you.
Yeah, I would love to see the layered perspective that TriMet has on corridors for transit that are kind of ripe for that investment as well, in addition to this.
I'm happy to forward that memo to you.
Add me to that list.
Got it. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Good. Thank you.
Anything with glossy photos, numbers on the back, charts, maps, you know.
Actually, it's very boring and has no glossy photos. I'm sorry.
Eric from our little Guthrie song.
All right, Martha, you're up. I think Craig mentioned it. I just wanted to make sure you all knew that Brian Kennedy and I are going to go out and visit with the Washington County City Managers. We're going to talk about the Parks Bond, but since we're coming, they've invited us to talk about commercial organics as well, so I'll let you know if anything comes out of that conversation.
Can you take it with you from...
Nobody, because you have some other party stuff happening around here at the building tomorrow. So, in fact, I don't want to take staff from solid waste until I know what it is they're walking into. I'd rather take that particular bullet myself. And then second, I want to make sure you saw the email from Andrew Scott announcing Julio Garcia is going to be our new HR director starting in mid-July. It's a great hire. We're really excited to get him. He is an amazing person. Coming to us from the city of Salt Lake City.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Mary Rose, last day will be May 3rd, and so I hope you guys get a chance to thank her.
This is comforting news. Didn't realize that selection was underway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you. Counselors?
I had a question about, there was a lot of news this weekend, as we all know. When the Oregonian ran the piece on the 50-50 split in transportation measure, or the 50-50 going to highway, 50-50 going to transit, or whatever that was, what did that miss? I read it, and it was a misunderstanding on their part. I could clearly see that, but where did they get that from, necessarily?
At Portland City Club, Mary Kyle in the question and answer asked me basically, and I don't even remember the...
What did the polling say?
I don't even remember what the actual question was.
What did you do with the polling?
I was so focused on answering by the time she got a third way through and pivoting, but she asked about the polling, and I basically just said, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a focus group or the early polls that we've taken, people are interested in both, it's a 50-50. Right, both roads and transit. Mm-hmm. And they took that and ran it as though...
Interstate, you know.
Well, highways. But they also took it and ran it as though it was a done deal. And that's how it got spun up in the environmental community. I'm like, I had actually said before that I don't want to get ahead of the task force.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah.
Yep, very clearly. And it was a response to polling, not Lynn's ambition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And...
Was that what?
You saw it online in the Oregonian? Or?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, yeah.
So staff are working on making sure that they're
open to spin.
Well, they're working with all of the folks that got spun up about it. Yeah, yeah.
Just how will you respond
to clarify
to those?
That it was a polling question.
I mean, we'll go back to the newspaper. Yeah. You mean, and like an article or something, or a.
You want her to respond to
that? No, I took away from what you just said that staff are preparing a response to some of this.
Yeah, but they're also talking directly with different groups to let them know that wasn't an intention, that wasn't a hard and fast thing. It was a response to what are the polls and surveys showing.
It definitely advocated, from what I could see, a group of folks that were spiraling with alarm of, oh, no, we're going to put money into all of the highways.
Yeah.
And this is just criminal, and et cetera, et cetera. And
she declined to condemn the Rose Quarter project as a desecration of the environment and humanity.
I did do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway.
That was
so
separate.
She actually said it served some purpose, which is suspect, and therefore...
I'm totally suspect.
Hanging time, yeah. So we're going to deal with that kind of strewn and drying of five people.
Yep, but there are a lot of there were task force members who actually entered into that conversation, which was helpful.
Yeah, it was helpful. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
They were helpful. Are you being facetious?
No.
No.
Well,
no, they were being helpful.
They were being helpful. Yeah, and just saying, hey, slow down.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else?
It was a really good presentation on Monday regarding the transportation design for community outcomes. I thought that went really well. I found it interesting, even though I know some of that, but I think it was well received, and there was people were engaged. Who else was there? I know, of course, Lynn was there. Was
it yesterday? The policy meeting? Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
That was so good.
Yes, it was.
The roof drilling, too? Mm.
Well, Lynn's presentation was rock star quality. I'm not doing that to shine you on. Don't get me wrong. You were talking to the engineers in the room, and they were going like this with their mouths.
Yeah.
You were talking to citizens. You were talking to electeds. And you didn't change subjects. You just laid it all out in understanding fashion. So that was a success.
And it was super problem-solving oriented. You talked about it like it was an issue. You didn't come and just read the Metro talking points, right? Like, this is why we're doing this measure, kind of like another presenter did later in the day. But no comment. So that was really good.
I didn't stay for the afternoon, so how did that go?
I wasn't there either. But I think it was just more focused on identifying barriers. Anybody else go? No? Okay.
Another way to get people engaged and get the message across.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Minimizing risk is really important here.
Do we feel like there's regional buy-in into this approach? The what is it? The practical design solution.
On-space practical
Sorry.
Design. Yeah. I tried to. It's the one place where I probably stepped in it. But cities and counties have been doing this for a long time. Martha obviously knows this. When you're resource-strapped, you don't start with a maximum of $100 million project. You're like, well, I've got $100,000. Mm-hmm. What can I do for my $100,000, right? And how do I minimize my risk? How do I get more projects out of this rather than one big project that then leaves everybody else behind? So cities and counties, I think, are already in that mindset. They're closer to that mindset. It's the state. It's usually the state mindset. And because they own most of the roads that we're discussing here, mm-hmm. it puts us at risk at not scoping the project correctly or over-scoping it because of their needs, wants, desires.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you think the people from ODOT that were in the room were responding?
So ODOT did an exercise and loosely adopted practical design like 15 years ago? Yeah. I feel like it was even before.
It started a long time ago, and so we haven't seen the effects of that.
Well, no, what they did, they made it voluntary, Bob. Oh, Counselor Stacey. It's getting to be a very, very informal conversation. They made it voluntary to project managers to either do it or not do it. It was not a requirement to make all projects cost-effective. It was not a requirement to make projects right-sized. It was not a requirement to look at the context of the community that you're working in. It was never a requirement. WSDOT's was a requirement. It was an executive order with accountability built into it.
Sorry, I mean, Madam President.
I learned from.
Explain why when you enter Sisters, you drop your speed to 20 miles an hour on a state highway and maybe go through a roundabout. There's some ambiguous street crossings. Whereas if you're in Portland, you floor it on your way to the Ross Island Bridge on a city street. It's also a state highway because by district, manager by manager.
Yes. And it's also driven by level of service. So you don't have the congestion levels necessarily except on certain weekends and Sisters. You don't have the level of congestion that's driving the decision making. If you're only at that one performance target measure, then you're screwed. So Bill Bryant is an amazing regional manager that was out on the east side forever. I don't know if he's retired now, but he did amazing things because he wasn't held to that standard. He was the communities on the eastern Oregon have beautiful safe routes to schools.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because they're not held to
the byway. Every little community has these beautiful sidewalks and
but here
strips and yeah
that's not.
Remember, there's winter over there.
Yeah. Well, I think that the policymakers forum was, I thought it was a huge success. I would love to see Metro continuing to scale in that direction. So many folks that are sitting on our task force and our housing bond oversight committee, and people make these comments of, you know, Metro is positioned to lead the region where we can be a transformational agency, and when Metro calls, the leaders come, right? So I think that given that gravitas, I would love for us to continue to bring those national best practice speakers and really, I guess, academics or professionals to. Because you know, it's that thing. I'm not a parent, but my parents always tell me that you can tell your child how to do something for their entire life, but it's until they hear it from someone else and they're like, "That's amazing! Why didn't I think of that?" And for me, I was sitting there the whole time. I was looking at Washington County commissioners. I was looking at Washington County transportation folks, both the city and the county level. And as they're nodding, I was like, "Great, great, 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 great."
Regarding the executive order, does that mean the governor made that order?
No, that was me. So,
so it has to be the director of the.
And not every agency, but state DOTs are paramilitaristic organizations, and they responded direct orders. And I revolted against it at the very beginning, and then I caved because I couldn't. I wanted ownership. I wanted the big planner in me wanted everybody to participate and join in and get to consensus, and then we'll move it because it wasn't moving very fast. And I looked at the executive team, and they're like, "Yeah, you need an executive." I'm like, "Okay, fine."
I'm just thinking about Oregon. I thought maybe we could work with the governor. We might, but... Or we hire, or she hires a director. That
I think at this point it's kind of up to the OTC to look at how that they want to, yeah, since they have direct oversight now.
To work on the commission or something.
Yeah. All right. Well, and they were there.
Oh, they were in the room.
There were three. I think there were three.
Oh, yeah, Orlando was there.
Orlando. A new guy that I hadn't met before, and I'm forgetting his name.
I said, I don't know, a bunch of them.
I didn't see Bob that
long. Oh, he wasn't there. You're right.
Tammy wasn't there. Him, no.
All right. Are we ready to adjourn? All right. I'm sorry. All right, we're adjourned. Thank you.